And welcome to Real Career Talk, a monthly podcast series brought to you by the network BICP, where we come together to have real career-based conversations with internal AT&T and external leaders in a variety of fields who share their career stories and give real holistic career advice. I am your host, Andrea Lim. And for this episode, we are going to talk about influence at any level. And with me today is someone who is more than qualified to speak on this theme, Mr. David Huntley, SEVP and Chief Compliance Officer of the Chief Compliance Office, who is responsible for compliance oversight of legal and regulatory requirements of the countries and jurisdictions where AT&T operates, promoting an ethical culture, developing policies to safeguard the privacy of customer and employee information, ensuring adherence to internal compliance requirements, investigating violations of the code of conduct, providing executive protection, and fulfilling legal demands for records. Prior to being appointed to his role in 2014, David served as SVP and Assistant General Counsel, AT&T Services, as well as SVP, General Counsel and Secretary for Advertising Solutions and Interactive Operations, among other positions. David, what a pleasure it is to have you join me today. Thank you so much time. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to do this.
Yes. Okay. So to get us in that sort of relaxed move, I always like opening up with a couple of icebreakers. So, share with me one guilty pleasure, like that one thing you cannot live without.
And I don't know that it's a guilty pleasure, but it's something that I have come to not be able to live without. And that's, I have to run. I have to work out every day. But running is really the thing. I started running when I was a senior at SMU. So that was 40-plus years ago. And so that's I don't know that it's a guilty pleasure, but it is my addiction and I have to do it every day.
Yes. Hey, listen, I just did the LA Marathon. And so I completely understand the idea of running. I'm on a challenge right now where I do a mile a day in between two holidays. So it was Memorial through 4th of July. So I'm a huge fan of running and just being active in general. So one other thing I'd love to know, because you're Googleable, but share with me something most people don't know if they Google you.
Probably the fact that my first job was taking people out on a lake of the woods in Ontario, Canada, fishing.
Wow. Okay. And do you still fish?
I still fish whenever I have an opportunity. I love it.
Nice, nice, nice. All righty. So our theme is about influence at any level. And I definitely want for our audience to, you know, really sink deep into this idea that it truly is, you know, possible to be influential at any level. So to get us started, give me a little idea about your own career path. Like, how did you find that career path? Some people have that sort of pivotal moment that occurs in their life that sets them off and truly impacted their journey. So give me a little idea of how you came to be where you are today.
Wow, that's I don't know that there was ever any one moment, but there are going to be two moments. One was when I first started with the company, and I went to my first legal conference. I started as an entry-level lawyer 28 years ago, and I looked around the room, and there were 92 lawyers at the time. Now, there are a whole lot more lawyers at AT&T than 92, but the SBC at the time, there were 92. And there was probably less than five Black attorneys.
Okay.
So I looked around the room and I said, I'm going to get to the top of this heap. And I said it to myself. And so I think the reason I say the journey starts with a declaration. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a declaration that I would get to the top of the food chain for the legal department at AT&T. That was a goal that I set out. So I tell people to start with something like that to get you jump started and going. The second part, that was really something that set me on my path was, let me back up and say, it's one thing to say you want to get to the top of the heap, but it's another thing to say, what does it take to get to the top of the heap? And I had to ask myself that as I looked around and I saw the people who were there first. And I said, what skills, what experiences do they have that I might need? And for me, it was people could do tax law. They could do labor and employment. They could do litigation. They could do many different areas of the law. So you have to set yourself on a path to acquire skills if you don't already have them. So that was the first thing. So then the second thing was, let's assume I've acquired a whole bunch of skills. And I'm thinking that I want to be, you know, that top lawyer, right? And then someone comes to you and they say, we think you can do something other than practice law. And that was not on my radar. So that caused me to think about doing something else. It caused me to think about reinventing myself. I had to do that in order to move to that next level. And so it was when I was in Houston, not in the legal department, and I was in an EA, today we call it ELNA, role in Houston. And they came to me and they said, you know what? We think you can be the CEO of the Greater Houston Partnership. And then they came to me and they said, we think you can be the chairman, CEO of a foundation. And then someone else came to me and said, I think you can lead the external affairs effort for Singular. So I had three job offers.
Wow. At one time.
And it all came to me at the same time. And the key part about that is that you need to know what your worth is. Mm-hmm. Even though I had not been actively looking, it really changed my mindset about what I could do and when it was time maybe to leave the company, but I chose not to because it allowed me to have a conversation with Ed Whitaker, who was the CEO at the time. And he said to me, are you unhappy? And I said, no, it's not that I'm unhappy, but I don't want to see the wave pass me by.
Yes.
And now I'm in a conversation with the CEO of the company that says, okay, if they want to do something with me, they better do it quick.
Right.
Because I had options. And so that the advice I give to folks is understand what your worth is. And when you do that, you're in a better position to bargain with those who might say, hey, I want you to go do this or go do that, because that may not be what you want to do.
True. Oh, my goodness. I can only speak for myself personally that I've been in positions, not at AT&T because I haven't been with the company, but a short amount of time where I didn't feel like I was in complete control of my career. So I would get moved around quite a bit, learned a lot, tremendous growth opportunity, but maybe not quite what I had declared for myself. So I think that's fantastic advice. I want to talk a little bit about, so I read this study a long time ago, quite frankly, and it continues to be relevant today. And it's on the subject of influence that is not necessarily the words that you're using, right? It's more about that body language, maybe even how you show up at work today. So let's talk a little bit about how you become aware of your influence and how you master that style, because it is not necessarily the words. It is maybe how you show up, how people perceive you, your body language, your eye contact, your hand gestures, whatever. Tell me a little bit about how you mastered your influential style.
So I think it starts for me with my father. And I have a picture of him, you know, here in my office. I don't know if you could see it, but
yes,
my dad was a chauffeur.
Okay.
And if you think about the picture that I just showed you, he's a man standing tall. He did not have a high school diploma, but he was very self-aware of himself. He had a great deal of integrity, and he had tremendous character. And so the way he carried himself for me was my first, you know, that was my first education into what influence looks like. Mm-hmm. I would, as a little boy, I'd walk around, you know, I'd go with him, he'd take me places, and we'd go into shops, and whether it was the cleaners or a grocery store or a car dealership, I saw how other people treated him. Mm-hmm. From the moment he walked in the door, he commanded that kind of respect. And as a little kid, I said, I wanted to be the kind of person who could walk into an establishment and command that kind of respect. So that's where it started for me.
Nice, nice. It's amazing to have such strong role models in your life. You know, so talking and now shifting it into the workplace, because so much has changed in terms of our interaction. More of it is by choice. Some of it is in person. Some of it is not in person. Some of it is remote, as we are even right now. So let's talk about how important influence is to grow your career. Can you share with me a time where you felt you used your influence, but it did not give you the results that you were expecting?
Well, no. I take that back. There is a time I can tell you. So there was a time. And so now I'm a legal officer of the company, but it didn't happen. I'm very fortunate. It didn't happen very often. And I think maybe there's a question later that starts with how do you grow your influence?
Absolutely.
Where does that come from? So mm-hmm. I started by watching my father, but then at the same time, you have to ask yourself, well, what do you bring to the table that would cause someone to be influenced by you, mm-hmm. your personal brand, your character,
yes.
your bearing, what do you bring to the table? And that's a multifaceted answer. And the reason it's multifaceted is because it depends on how good you are at what you do.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a chauffeur, and he was one of the best chauffeurs there was around. And that I could tell. So ask yourself, am I the best at whatever it is I'm supposed to do? Because you have influence by what it is you do and how you do it.
Right.
Okay. So now fast forward to when I am a legal officer and I'm over legal operations for the legal department at AT&T. And I'm having a conversation with Wayne Watts, the general counsel, and he has, you know, he says, okay, David, we are going to divest ourselves of the Yellow Page business. Now, I'm the general counsel. I've been the general counsel of the Yellow, was at the time the general counsel. And he says, how many lawyers are going to go with the business? And I said, none. And he said, no, that's not what I'm expecting. Mm-hmm. How about zero? You're the only one who stays. And I'm dumbfounded. I'm shocked.
Sure.
He looks at me and says, that didn't go like you thought it was going to go. And I said, no, it didn't. I said, however, but I'll be back. So it took me multiple times to convince him that the best option that we could give our lawyers would be to have them have opportunities to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And if they wanted to go, well, then the acquiring company would have to pay them to do that.
That's about knowing the value of your team, knowing the value of what you bring, which is fantastic. So not only, I think, does influence mean looking at what you do internally, but how you impact others and everyone sort of blend and work well to be a strong unit, which I think is important. So let's talk about how you do develop those skills, because it is an important skill. It is one that I think can help you rise in your career. Give the audience and those that might be listening, myself included, how do you start honing in on your skill set of influence?
I think that it requires you to first be very self-aware. You need to be self-aware of what you can and cannot do. And so that requires you to do a bit of homework. It requires that you do a bit of preparation. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean sometimes a bit. I mean, sometimes it's a lot of preparation that goes into this. You have to be very thoughtful so that when you do come back. So let me go back to what I just told you. When I went back in that second time, I had an idea of the credentials of all of the lawyers mm-hmm. that I wanted to keep. And I had to build a case for that. Now, had I been better prepared the first time out of the gate, I might not have had to have the comeback to see how that was going to work out. And so I think it starts with being self-aware. Sometimes we can be too confident in ourselves, and it causes us to skip a step or two mm-hmm. that are very much needed to get to that position of influence so that you can actually exert that. You know, influence is really about your ability to cause an effect, to affect behavior, to affect something to happen. That's where influence comes. And I think that you have to be very careful about when you use it. I think that today, in today's environment here at AT&T, people are looking to see who can, quote unquote, punch above their weight. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that means that you don't have the title. A lot of times it means you don't have the level, but you have the influence because of your expertise.
Yes.
And when you start to speak, people listen because now you bring a wealth of knowledge and experience that other people don't have. You bring something to the table that they don't have and that they need.
Yes.
And again, you're now able to exert influence, and yet you may not have the title, you may not have the position, but once you walk out of the room, they will remember you.
Absolutely. And there is a correlation between power and influence and how it is used. And we really have to be careful about that. Because it can jeopardize your career. So I completely agree with you that when you have the confidence, when you have the self-awareness, all of those things are incredibly important. You do need to be careful of how you wield it, so to speak, as you just mentioned. So talk with me a little bit about the perception, though, because you touched upon this a little bit. People at different levels, be it an AT&T or any company for that matter, they may not be aware that because they don't have the title, that they can speak up. So give your best advice for someone who's either started out at the company or who is been at the company for a long time, has not spoken up, but they can be influential. What advice would you give them about where to start, how to get out of that mindset that you are limiting yourself by?
Sure. So the first thing I would say is you can be the smartest person in the room, but if nobody knows it, it doesn't do you any good. So ask yourself, when you are in the room, when you have a seat at the table, you have to have enough courage mm-hmm. to speak up and use your position. Mm-hmm. Now, that is something that I've done throughout my entire career. And it starts with my father saying, son, act like you belong. There are times when you go places and you're in rooms and you've never been there before and you get intimidated by all the people in the room with all the big titles and with all the big whatevers. But just remember, they go to the bathroom just like you do. They get up every day and they put their clothes on just like you do. And so you have to do something that allows you to say, I'm here. I'm going to act like I belong and I should be here. You've heard of the imposter syndrome.
Mm.
And that, unfortunately, can sometimes paralyze us when we think we don't belong in the room.
Right.
And we don't speak up, we don't talk. But, you know, for me, I have always felt if you prepare and you go to the meeting and you have a seat at the table, then you're there for, remember, you're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now use your platform, speak up. I think the thing that got me noticed early on as a lawyer in our business is the fact that when I would be in the room, I wouldn't just sit there and wait for the person to ask, well, what about the legal implications of this? Since I had a seat at the table, didn't care what my level was, I would ask the CEO of the business unit, I'd say, well, why are we building it that way?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that the best way to do that? Is that the best way to market that? Is that the best way to price that? Those are just some simple questions that would pop into my head. And whether I'd ask those questions, it would have, you know, you'd have to, it's a calculus that you weigh in your head and you have to say, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm listening to this. Everybody else is nodding as if this is the best thing that's ever been said and on the planet. And it is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so you have to, now you have to be, you know,
professional,
somewhat, not political. You got to be political. There's professional and there's political. And so you have to read the room. You have to have a high EQ. And if you don't have a high EQ, you need to start to develop that, because mm-hmm. in today's environment, people, we're looking for leaders with EQ.
Yes.
We're looking for leaders who can read a room. We're looking for people who can relate to other people. What we have to do is too hard if you don't have a high EQ. And so if you don't have it, you need to develop it. But yes, I think that if you're prepared and you believe that you belong, then you should act like you belong and you should participate.
Yeah, I love that advice. Act as if. That's probably some very, very good words to live by. You kind of touched upon this a little bit. And I want to just dive into it just a little bit, because when you do have a seat at the table and you're acting as if, you know, there could be those moments where you have some blunders, you have some missteps, or, you know, it's just a natural human experience where you maybe did something incorrectly and you created an influential situation that you wish you could, you know, sort of backpedal out of. So share one lesson that you learned about something you should avoid when it comes to trying to build influence at any level at work that could possibly put you in a bind that, you know, would be difficult to unwind from. So how would you best self-correct that situation?
I think you have to read the room. You have to read the situation, and you can't allow your pride to get in the way. I think that the worst thing that we could ever fall into is hubris. Mm-hmm. By that I mean we think we're all that, and we're beyond reproach, and we're beyond making a mistake. That's a big, I think, failure when personal failure when you can't see beyond that. So this gets into the self-awareness, and I've seen leaders who never ask, "Hey, how was that presentation? How did I do?" Because at some point we think that we are reached a certain level, and therefore, you know, everything I say is good. Everything I say is okay. You really ought to have a good ally, somebody that you can count on to say, Dave, come on now. Do you realize what you just said? Do you realize what you just did? And I'll give you something that happened to me. My team was up on the 10th floor and I was on the fourth floor, and something was on my mind that day. So when I went up to the floor to interact and engage with the team, I got off of the elevator and I didn't acknowledge or speak to people. Mm-hmm. I got off of the elevator and I turned to the left and I just, I was very focused on what I wanted to do and what I had on my mind. And one of my team members, somebody, this was a person who was probably two or three, mm-hmm. sent me a note. And she said, David, I just want to bring something to your attention. You got off of the elevator and you failed to acknowledge a group of team members, standing right there. And I know that's not how you want to come across, but I just want to point that out to you.
Wow.
I wrote, now first, it's easy to say, how busy I am?
Right.
Do you know what I have to deal with? You know what's on my mind? Do you know what I have to do, what I'm faced with? And I caught myself. Because you see, I have this picture of this chauffeur.
Yes.
And he reminds me that you don't get so full of yourself that you can't see your own shortcomings and failures. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that person back and I said, duly noted, thank you so much. Now, every time I get on the elevator, I don't care who's on there, I turn around and, hi, how good to see you. Hello. But it's a very valuable lesson.
Sure.
And I think that, having a friend, having an ally, having a teammate, having somebody who can talk to you and let you know. So sometimes you're not aware. Sometimes you're aware. Sometimes you know when you've done something you shouldn't have done, or you've overstepped, or you've used your influence in the wrong way. And typically this is, when you were asking a bit about the power. So now we move into the point where, you use influence, you get a bump, you get a promotion, and you get a little bit of power. And now you have a little bit of power and you've got that title. And the question is, are you going to use the influence and the power for good,
right,
or bad?
Right.
And the word that comes to mind that my father would say is, that's where integrity comes into play.
Absolutely.
Because now you have a responsibility, in my humble opinion. Once you get to this power, this position, all of the you've been looking to do, that comes with responsibility. And that means that you should have the integrity of doing it the right way.
And it's helpful if you do have that sort of, I'm going to call it that sounding board. If it's one person or a board of directors, which is like the new, not maybe a new phrase, but a lot of people use it. Got to have a team who at least is comfortable having those courageous conversations, like that young lady or gentleman who sent you that email. They were courageous enough to let you know, hey, you normally always look like this, but this one day you did not. And I think that's great advice that all of us should take into account. But sometimes it's difficult to find those mentors. So, and we're coming up to the end of our conversation, but two quick questions I don't want to leave without asking is, with regards to finding those allies, did you have a easier time, moderate time, or a challenging time finding those great allies, that sounding board that would be always in your corner? And what would be the advice that you would give to someone who was an introvert and, needing to find a good mentor?
Yeah. So I think that there are two kinds of folks you need to find. You need to find mentors, but you also need to find some sponsors. And there's a difference. Mentors are people who can help you in your journey to perfect your craft, to perfect whatever it is you do. Those mentors are people who can say, I have enough experience. They don't necessarily have to be you know, at a different level. But if they've had the position or if they've been in the space longer than you have, and they know what great and excellence looks like, they can be your mentor because they can help you get to be great and really, really good at whatever it is. So that's the one thing. But I think that we get too hung up on, ooh, who's going to be my mentor? How can I do that? Where do I find one? I think you look around and you identify people who are really good at what they do. Mm-hmm. That's what I would walk into a room. When I took this job, I didn't know squat about compliance. I knew what it was, but it's a lot more to it than just, oh, it's just compliance. And I asked myself, well, who's the best? And there was a woman, her name is Melissa Barnes. She's retired, but she was a lawyer. And she was the best, in my opinion. And she's with Eli Lilly, and she was the best at it. And I called her up. I'd heard a lot of good things. And I said, what advice would you give me? I called the person over at Google. I called the person at Boeing. I wanted to find out the best. Now, unfortunately, you know who the best are? The best can be some of the people who've had the biggest failures.
Yes.
So think about what happened at Boeing. Think about what happened at Walmart. Think about what happened. There's companies that have big brands that have stumbled, mm-hmm. Wells Fargo. But what happens is they develop really good programs because of the stumbles. And so I sought out the folks that I needed to speak to. And I would tell you, I don't know where you are in your individual journey in your space, but you know where you are and you know who's really good at what they do. Right. And don't be too proud to say, hey, can I just talk to you? Now, you don't have to walk up and say, hey, would you be my mentor? A lot of people say, I don't have time to be somebody's mentor. But what you say is, hey, give a minute. I'd like to ask you some questions. Mm-hmm. And you can have make somebody de facto mentor. That's what I did. Sure. When I was practicing law, I went up to one of the best lawyers in the firm. And I said, I knocked on the door and I said, Mr. Harrell. His name was in the firm. It was Locke Purnell Rain Harrell. He had been the state bar president, the national bar president. He was a giant in the legal community. I walked in and I said, Mr. Harrell, do you have a minute? He said, yes, David, come on in. First of all, a lot of people, if they have a spare moment, they love talking to people.
Sure.
They want to share and impart their stuff, their wisdom. And so I just said, hey, I'd like to ask you, boom, boom, boom. He answered the questions and he said, David, anytime. I said, thank you so much. He said, anytime. Now you have a mentor. Did I ask him to be my mentor? No. But he said, anytime. Ed Whitaker. I'm in the car with him. I was his Jeep driver. I was a senior manager. Don't be too proud and high and mighty that you can't drive somebody around. The best thing I did was to be the Jeep driver for Ed Whitaker. Mm-hmm. And one day he asked me, he said, what can I do for you? And I'm going to just say the good Lord told me to say this because I'm not that smart. I said, Mr. Whitaker, one day I might want to pick your brain. Mm-hmm. And I would hope you would answer my phone call. And he said, my number is 210-351. Right. You know, he was a slow talker. But that allowed me, when I had those three offers that I was talking to you about,
yes,
I picked up the phone and I called him and he took my call and then we talked through it.
Yes.
But did I say, Mr. Whitaker, I want you to be my mentor? No.
Exactly. Exactly. Love that advice. Find the people who are the best at what you want to do and see if you can't pick their brains for just a few moments. Well, I thank you so much for letting me pick your brain. I know I kind of often know I went off script, but your ideas and the comments that you said just led to completely different conversations. So being that we're at the end, I do want to know from you yourself, if there was any question that I should have asked you that I didn't, and how would you answer it?
I think the question that I would ask me is, are you satisfied with your career? Mm. You know, we go through a lot. We do a lot. And I would tell you that I am. But the advice that I would give my younger self is, I was a pleaser. And so I could do a lot of different things. I've been blessed to have some gifts, and I was able to do that. But what I should have done is that I should have been a bit more thoughtful about where I wanted the ultimate outcome to be. Now, I'm not complaining about how this has ended up. I've had a seat at the table in the C-suite for 9 years. That's a pretty good run. And I think that that's great. But the advice I would give my younger self is to be a bit more strategic. And so then when people tap you on the shoulder and they say, oh, we think you can do this, you have to ask yourself, is this something that I want to do? Mm-hmm. Is this something I should do? And yes, sometimes you take a lateral move instead of a promotion because it's preparing you for something else. But, you know, the company wants to get their money's worth out of you, right? But yeah, you need to be sure that you get your money's worth out of the company.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Strong advice. I know my mother tells me all the time, be intentional. Know what you want. And when you figure out that passion, go for it. It may not come to you quite so easily, or you may have to, like you said, deviate a little bit, but stay intentional, stay focused. So I love that advice. Thank you so much, David, for joining me today. I have learned so much. I truly appreciate you taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule. This has been fantastic. And I know all of the listeners as well are going to just tune in very, very closely to this conversation. So I can't thank you enough.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you. And for those who will be watching and listening, we'll catch you at the next Real Career Talk. Stay true to you.